Welcome in, podcast listeners. We have got an absolute loaded show for you. Charles Barkley speaks truth to power on the NBA pregame show. Also, a lot of good stuff. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on the eve of the SEC's return. John McClain all about the NFL. And we'll talk with Joel Klatt, who is Fox College Football's lead analyst as he gets ready for the Kansas State-Oklahoma game. All that rolling your direction. So much to discuss. Make sure you don't miss a minute. Download it as many times as you can. Maybe only once. But make sure that you listen to all 3 hours and also that you catch up for all the week. Go give us 5 stars on the podcast review and enjoy the Friday edition of the show. Begins now.
Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
One of the things we learned last night, I would say, is that Minshew mania might have been a little bit exaggerated as we came down the stretch run of the first 2 weeks of the season. Gardner Minshew looked fantastic, but it was a matchup between the beard and the mustache, and the beard won out by an order of magnitude. Ryan Fitzpatrick was virtually perfect, 18 of 20 from the field. What I stood out to me the most about this game was just how much Ryan Fitzpatrick's teammates like him. It seemed like when he scored that rushing touchdown and kind of went full on fullback to put this game away, that everybody was excited to celebrate with him. Minshew threw the ball a lot. He went 30 of 42 for 275 yards, but he didn't ever really get the ball in the end zone. He got sacked several times. There wasn't a great rush attack. I mean, this was a pretty dominant win for the Miami Dolphins. It was their first double-digit win. We got a lot of listeners in South Florida who are long-suffering Miami Dolphin fans. It was the first double-digit win for the Miami Dolphins since 2017, which is a pretty wild stat to hit you with. We went 1 out of 3 on our bets. Gardner Minshew went over on the yardage totals, but we found a way to lose. I can't believe we lost this one. I felt like the over was in the bag based on how this game started. I didn't think the Jags would totally disappear on offense like they did. And also, they obviously was wrong about the Jags being favored. I was wrong about that one, too. I thought Minshew mania was going to continue. I was wrong. Fitzmagic dominated. And as a result, the Jacksonville Jaguars fall to 1-2, and a lot of the momentum that came out of their first win against the Indianapolis Colts has faded. Now, if you're a Jags fan, the positive is you get the Bengals, and you get a long rest before you play the Bengals, so you would think you have a decent chance to win that game. Then you go on the road against the Texans. Texans might still be winless by the time you play that game. And then you get the Lions. So the next three are still very winnable for the Jacksonville Jaguars, I would say. The other thing is, from the Miami Dolphin perspective, a lot of people were starting to say, hey, when might we get Tua? Now I think that certainly is not going to be anytime soon, and it's possible they don't even really play Tua much this season at all, because the schedule's pretty brutal in the first half for the Dolphins. Now, by the second half, they have a really kind of interesting schedule quirk where the Dolphins play the Jets, then they have a bye week, and then they get the Jets again. That's in mid-November. If you wanted to start a quarterback who was never played in the NFL before, Jets, bye week, Jets is maybe the greatest setup for a rookie quarterback debut that I've ever seen. And then you get the Bengals after that, which would mean you could get Tua against Joe Burrow. But we'll see whether the Dolphins are in any rush at all to bring him back. But if they were, that's probably the time in the season where I would think it makes the most sense. Again, when you get the Jets, bye week Jets, that seems like a pretty good opportunity to break in a new quarterback and get him some reps. We'll see what exactly ends up happening there. We have got, by the way, an absolutely loaded program coming your way. And up next, we're going to talk with the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, who I think is more responsible for the return of college football than any single individual in the entire country. And so we'll talk about that. Right now, the SEC seems good for every team. I feel like you need to knock on wood when you say that, but it seems like the SEC is in good shape, theoretically, to be able to have all 14 teams playing on Saturday. We'll get the latest from Greg Sankey about that. In the second hour of the program, John McClain, one of my favorite guys. He's been covering the NFL for 44 years. He's with the Houston Chronicle. He will join us in the second hour of the program to break down everything in the world of the NFL. And then in the third hour, we're headed out to Oklahoma, where our buddy Joel Klatt is going to be calling the top game for Fox College Football. He's got Kansas State on the road against Oklahoma. And we will see what he thinks about what for many people will be the debut of Spencer Rattler. The other story that is out there, the Lakers won. And so for the third straight series, the Denver Nuggets are down 3-1. So you could argue that the Nuggets have the Lakers exactly where they want them. However, I don't think the Lakers are going to find a way to lose three straight games to the Nuggets. They won down the stretch of a game to take a 3-1 series lead. We know already that the Miami Heat have a 3-1 series lead, and so odds-on favorite at this point in time would be that we would get a Lakers versus Heat NBA Finals that almost no one will watch. And I thought it was kind of intriguing last night, kind of monitoring what people were tweeting about on my feed. Way more people, I feel like, and I'm sure the numbers are going to reflect that this is true, were watching the Dolphins go up against the Jags in a relatively, let's be honest, meaningless game in the NFL on a Thursday night than were watching the NBA Western Conference Finals with LeBron James playing. And that's just a function of why the NBA never wants to be competing with college football or certainly the NFL. And now they're going to be going head-to-head with both in a big way. And that's why I've said, look, when it gets to the NBA Finals, if I were the NBA, I'd be like, man, we're only going to play on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Friday, right? Every week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday. And I would even play back-to-back games to be able to get it done because nobody's going to watch the NBA when NFL games are going on or when college football games are going on. So, for instance, the Lakers are going to play and try to close out the Denver Nuggets on Saturday. College football is going to be going. Nobody's going to pay attention. And then on Monday night, the Lakers, I believe, Dub, you can confirm this, the Lakers, in theory, if they need to play a game six, would be going head-to-head with Monday night football, and literally no one is going to watch NBA basketball over the game between the Chiefs and the Ravens, which is probably the best regular season game that is scheduled in the entirety of the NFL, and it's a Monday night football game. So I just don't think there's any way that anybody's going to notice. In fact, the Lakers could probably lose game five and they could lose game six, and most people wouldn't notice because that's kind of what happened with the LA Clippers. Remember, the Clippers got up 3-1, and then they played over the weekend, and there was a lot of other sporting events going on, and then a lot of you, including me, just took a step back, and you're like, wait a minute, this game's actually going to be going for seven games, and most people didn't even pay attention to Game 5 or to Game 6. But that is where we are as we head forward in the NBA playoffs, where it looks like we are rapidly sliding towards a Lakers versus Heat NBA Finals. And Adam Silver would have to be somewhat happy about that because at least he would get LeBron James, but I just don't think anybody's going to care in terms of viewership for that. So what did we learn big picture from the game that people actually watched from the Dolphins and the Jags? I would say your biggest takeaway needs to be this. Tua may not come back anytime soon. Minshew mania may not be a reality as much as many people, including me, wanted to believe based on how the Jags looked in week one and the fact that they played a very winnable week two game, both division games against the Colts and the Titans respectively, that maybe they were going to be able to be decent and they wouldn't be in the mix for Trevor Lawrence. This was not a performance, if you're a Jacksonville fan, that makes you think, okay, Gardner Minshew is our long-term quarterback for the future. Doesn't mean that he might not be the long-term quarterback for the future because he was outstanding in the first 2 weeks of the season, but now you've got 3 weeks of data points and you just have to keep stacking them up and see where you are by the time you get to the 11th or 12th week of the season and start to have a better sense of what might be coming down the line. The other thing I want to say is I watched some of Inside the NBA, and we're going to play, maybe we could play these four people here in the first hour too, Dub. I know we were saying we were potentially going to play them in the second hour, but let's actually think about playing both of these clips, if we can, from Charles Barkley, talking about two different things that are obviously not normal basketball topics: defunding the police and also what happened with Breonna Taylor. Let's go ahead and play those right here. Only about a minute. You can listen to both these clips.
You have to really be careful when we, you know, I hear these fools on TV talking about defund the police and things like that. We need police reform and prison reform and things like that. Because you know who ain't going to defund the cops? White neighborhoods and rich neighborhoods. So that notion they keep saying that, I'm like, wait a minute, we just going to leave. Who are black people supposed to call? Ghostbusters? When we have crime in our neighborhoods, we need police reform. But like I say, white people, especially rich white people, they're always going to have cops. So we need to stop that defund or abolish the cops crap. Just bad the young lady lost her life. But, you know, we do have to take into account that her boyfriend did shoot at the cops and shot a cop. So, like I say, even though I'm really sorry she lost her life, I don't think that we can just say we can put this in the same situation with George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery. I just don't believe that.
I wanted to play both those clips because it's not easy to talk about defunding the police or the Breonna Taylor case. But it's been so obsessively covered in the world of sports. I thought that Charles Barkley right there in basically that those 60 seconds did a better job discussing this situation than almost anybody in the world of the NBA has. And he kind of cut to the chase.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome back in. I hope all of you are having a fantastic Friday. I'm having a great Friday because I can't wait for SEC football to be back, and I can't wait for our conversation to get rolling here with Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC. Greg, thanks for getting up early with us. I can't even imagine what it feels like for you, because I texted with you on Friday, I think it was. I was out to dinner with my family, and I happened to look up at the television, and I was like, wait a minute, that's the SEC Network on, and it's actual real live sports that's taking place. And it was women's soccer. And I was like, hey, congrats, you made it, because you were in Nashville on, I think it was March 11th, basically, when everything shuts down. You can correct me if that date's wrong. And I know it's probably felt like 15 years have passed for you since March 11th. Yeah. How gratifying was it to, before we even get to talking about the SEC being back, how gratifying was it to just have sports going again in the SEC last weekend?
Well, it was great. In fact, I was tied up at the office, so I was unable to watch the start of the game, but it went double overtime tie, as it happens in soccer. So, like, we played all the soccer possible on that first night. And then, I mean, whoever would have thought that on a Saturday in September, the SEC Network would have a women's soccer triple header. And what people don't understand, we had a doubleheader Sunday. The logistics of making that happen for the teams, you know, that's enough. But for the TV production, both local and connections, and just to make it all work was really encouraging that we could kind of pull this off, if you will. And it goes back to, you know, there were a series of days. March 11th, we said no fans beginning on Thursday. And then Rudy Gobert happened that night. And then March 12th, we shut the tournament down. And then March 13th, which was Friday, we just stopped everything, weightlifting, spring practice, everything. So to have a return was incredible. More than encouraging.
What does it feel like time-wise for you since everything shut down in mid-March to now? You look back now, how long does it feel like it has been to you since March? I mean, I feel like just for what I do, I've lived like 10 years in the last six months in terms of what we've done with this show. But I know a lot of what you have been through as well. It has to feel like at least that long for you also.
Yeah, a decade is what I would have said. In fact, Kansas City's first NFL game, they were showing Super Bowl highlights, and I was able to go to the Super Bowl. And we had a few more weeks of normal, but we knew COVID was around. We were preparing even then. But that was like the last full-on experience I enjoyed, and that just seems like eons ago.
It really does. I was at the Super Bowl for that whole week. We did the television show there. Fox had the Super Bowl. And it really does feel like a totally different lifetime. What will your Saturday be like? What is your planned day? And what do you think you will feel when toe meets leather officially and the SEC football season kicks off? Have you even thought about what that experience will feel like?
The last few days I have. You know, usually, I say with a smile on my face, in the commissioner's job, the best moment on a Saturday is kickoff of the first game, because after that it's, you know, controversies, close calls, correct calls, debates about calls, you know, is there going to be a lightning delay? Who knows, whatever may happen. So I always enjoy when I am able to, that early kick, which I know fans are not always appreciative of, but being there on the field for an early kickoff is like the best thing for me on a Saturday. This year, though, I won't be traveling initially. I usually go to see people and visit, have things to do. I don't get to see much of the game. I'll usually get to watch a little bit. And in this environment, you cannot just walk freely and visit, you know, and say hello and talk. So I'll be in Birmingham, either in my home office or my office, watching throughout the day, just learning from what's happening, adapting if we need to. We have staff assigned to each game. They're going to be doing that from a distance. So watching generally in our video center for issues that may arise. And that'll be the norm, Clay, to begin probably the first few weeks, and we'll just see how it goes and what that means for travel. But I won't sleep probably Friday night. I'm sure I'll be up early. The foot will be tapping as we get to kick off, just to see it happen.
Did you believe that this was actually going to happen? Now that we know that college football has kicked off, the ACC, the Big 12 have, it's not going to go perfectly smooth. I think everybody out there would acknowledge that. But back in early August, did you ever think that the SEC would be able to play in the fall? Did you think college football? Kind of take us through what it was like, the progression of, you know, the highs and some of the lows in trying to get to the eve of college football kicking off for the SEC.
Yeah, you know, the roller coaster, which is the best way to describe it, likely goes right back into mid-March. And if you take that March 13th, again, that was Friday, we had stopped competition through March 30th. But we hadn't disrupted everything. And then on March 13th is, you know, information was beginning to emerge. And you know, we have people coming back from spring break. You had increasing cases or the potential of cases. You had testimony in Congress. When we stopped everything, that was, for me, a low point. Not because anything incorrect was being done. We were, in fact, doing the best we could with a lot of moving parts, but I knew that we were sending people away from their foundation. So class schedules, teams, locker rooms, competition. I really thought about baseball first, Clay. And, you know, the level of baseball we play, we have the national championship trophy still here from Vanderbilt's win. And 2019, the first round draft picks, you know, all of that opportunity to compete and be seen, you know, just evaporated. And then it went to the preparation for football, because we had teams pulled off of the practice field that day for spring practice. And then just little things to try to coalesce in a decision-making mode for our conference. One of the hardest things was when we shut everything down, it was nothing, like no weight rooms, no group gatherings by Zoom, which seems normal now. And so the effort to go from 0 hours of team meetings on iPads to 2 hours, like, was just kind of an angry debate, and a lot of stress. And so you just kind of went through those things. Come back June 8th, we had some tension around when can we come back to voluntary activities, and then can we continue to, you know, accelerate. And then you had just media perspectives that were not going to be supportive, which is fine. You can be critical, but some of the criticism wasn't attached to real information, it seemed. And we're all trying to figure it out. And then you go into August, And there were a few tough weekends, late July, early August, as you're watching speculation, decisions, commentary, and then, you know, colleague conferences stop. But we had made decisions that we were going to take our time in decision making because there's so much information that continues to emerge, you know, every day. We've all seen that, you know, from day to day information changes. And one of the things said to me early on was, if you can take as long as possible to make major decisions, you'll have better information when you actually have to make those decisions, because we're learning new things every day. And so that became a mantra for us that got us through some of the tougher times in late July and early August. And if you, I should have answered the question with this, was I observed to some media folks, our TV partners. I'm like, I don't know if I can make it to September 26th, you know, just early August. But if we can get to the start line, I feel pretty good about being able to conduct the season. Now, it may be different than we've ever experienced, but if I can just get to the start line, so it's gratifying to be, you know, a day before the start line when still nothing's guaranteed, but at least we've made it here.
I got to give you credit, and we've known each other for a pretty decent amount of time now, but you, I think, uniquely in a very difficult situation, managed to keep things as calm as you can in a chaotic situation. And also, there's a lot of noise out there, right? And a lot of times what I always try to focus on is, what's the noise that matters, right? What's the information that I need to be able to grab that's cutting through? Not necessarily the emotion, not necessarily all of the din of all of the noise all day long. And this is not just you and me. This is everybody, right? Everybody's phone's constantly dinging. Everybody's constantly getting text messages, notifications. And sometimes you can get deluged by an overflow of information and not be able to kind of get to the essence of what matters the most. And what you told me, and I think you said it on this show, and I don't think I'm giving away any confidence by saying it because I think you said it publicly, but what you said has been proven to be 100% true here. You said, look, when our kids get back on campus in early, you know, mid to late August, we're going to see an infection rate, you know, increase substantially. That's what my experts tell me. That's what you said. That's what you saw. And then you said, we're pushing back to September 26th because they also tell me that we should then be able to get some control of it and the numbers should be coming down by the time we get to late September. We're past Labor Day and all of those things. That's been proven to be 100% true. How difficult was it to be able to get to that idea and trust it, right, with all of the noise that was out there?
There's a couple elements to that. So I read a book a few years ago by Nate Silver called The Signal and the Noise.
Yeah, I've read it too, which is that's why I use that phrase, Signal and the Noise. Nate Silver is a brilliant guy, but the metaphor that he used, being able to figure out what matters within that context, right, that's exactly what I was referencing. It's a great read.
Just the title stuck with me, and I have other notes that I made, but what is it that's just a bunch of noise, and what do you really have to pay attention to? And I'm fortunate to have a lot of bright people around me in our office, on our campuses. So that was the first part, is recognizing that, you know what, there are going to be a lot of critics, and there still are. And I actually use that in communicating with our campus leaders, athletics department leaders, to say part of our challenge will be to weather kind of the storm here, weather the noise, not numbers, not positive tests, not anything really around the virus directly, but the indirect impact. So we kind of message that repeatedly and have walked through it together. But then you have to give credit to our campuses. And I think this is a twist on much of what you've read over the last year or last month, which is numbers, numbers, numbers. But our campuses had worked with their communities. They had adapted content delivery, which is how we're conducting classes. You know, not every plan is perfect, especially the first time through, but they updated isolation, testing. We had a lot of aggressive testing taking place on campuses. And, you know, I saw a note earlier this week from the University of Georgia where they released their total campus numbers that dropped by like 80% in the last 2 weeks, 85% downward trend. People had to learn how to function in the new environment. When you bring more people into a community, those who've been there, like our student athletes, are affected by that. So we had to address that concern. And we're 3 weeks past now the last first day of classes, so the last point of startup of residential learning on our universities. They're still moving through. They've all had to adjust, and all of that informed what we did. And, you know, it's like the SEC. So when we adjusted to the 26th and people had asked, what's the primary reason? The primary reason was we have to have our campuses come back to life, and we have to allow time. We have to prepare for disruption related to that. And that, I think the cynics would kind of sniff at that, but that was reality. We exist to support our universities. And in fact, maybe just the last note, our football players on one of our video conferences were asking, like, why are we bringing students back? We've learned all they can do is mess it up for us. You know, just tell them to stay away and we can play football. And, you know, you're like explaining, well, that's really not what we do in higher education. You're a part of a campus, and I appreciated their passion. But it's, you know, it's just a reality we saw, and we knew it have to be there. And it's not been just easy. It's not been normal, but it's a tribute to all of our campus leaders and athletics department leaders that were to this point.
When the Big Ten and the Pac-12 shut down and you get official word that they are shutting down, what was your immediate reaction?
I had a pretty good sense, particularly with the Pac-12 situation, of what was going to take place, and had been asked about our direction. And, you know, my feedback was we were going to be making any, if we were going to pull the plug, it would be much later. We had adjusted our season at that point. We had delayed the start of padded practice into like late August. So we had created space for decision making for ourselves. And, you know, the public health restrictions on the West Coast kind of dictated their outcome. The Big Ten, probably a little bit more rapidly developing, but I was one who thought about us. You know, so it wasn't the most comfortable circumstance, but my focus was on communicating with our members. Their focus was on what's the right decision for our campus and our conference. And so it was, you know, it was uncomfortable. But I issued a statement, I think it was on August 10th, and we monitor social media. And Clay, when I said, we're going to pay attention to what other people do, but it's not going to cause us to simply follow. I forget the exact words I used. It was, we're going to continue on, basically. The word cloud was dominated by the word hope. Like, the good feedback was the word hope. And nothing else was close. And I've kept that on my desk for now a month and a half, because I think that word kind of defined what we do in a way, which is a connection to something and providing hope that we could make this happen. No guarantees, but hope was meaningful to people in a lot of ways.
There was a lot of negativity, and it goes back to the kind of that signal in the noise, like where every time there is a negative story in the world of sports, I'm not just talking about college football, I'm talking about, if it's Major League Baseball, the Marlins test positive, and a lot of people say, oh my God, you got to shut down baseball. The same thing happened in virtually every sport early on, MLS. You guys have built in some leeway here. How optimistic are you about where you are starting and the system that is in place that could lead you all the way through to December 19th? As we kind of look forward, as much as you can look forward and be optimistic about what anything's going to happen in the country.
Right. I'm not going to be comfortable. I think that's just our reality, is one of, we're not going to be comfortable yet. We have a plan. The plan has worked. So we're sitting here day out, still moving forward. You know, 3 weeks ago that I think that was going to happen. You know, I'm grateful to be here, but I knew there were no guarantees. There's no guarantees about tomorrow. I learned that on March 11th, 12th, and 13th when we were in Nashville. But we put a plan in place. We also have medical advisors who will help us adapt. Clay, the mantra of the circumstances around the virus are going to dictate our path forward. So we are a bit at the mercy of personal conduct, taking care of oneself, heeding public health warnings. We are at the mercy of test results. We've done everything we can to put the right kind of programs in place, but all of our participants have to pay attention to the expectations. You know what? I don't like wearing a mask, but I know it helps. It helps us avoid problems. And we added Connexon devices for tracking and tracing, both in-game primarily, but even during the week to remind us to stay away, to prevent or lessen the threat of spread. And we have to be attentive. And when you go back to, like, the Major League Baseball circumstance was happening as we were coming down to the finish line of making decisions. And I had said, you know, baseball will be a really good learning example for us because they're moving from city to city and they're not playing in this bubble environment. And, lo and behold, they had a set of issues, but they've weathered those. And I think with any of these things, you're going to have to weather through some of this disruption. And we've seen that in college football. We saw it in Major League Baseball. You know, NASCAR hasn't been terribly affected, which is fascinating to me. I think they've had, one or two drivers affected, Jimmy Johnson being the most prominent. But it's an indication you can move around a lot. You can have a lot of people. If you adapt properly, pay attention to the expectations and the health guidance, you can compete and participate in a pretty much healthy manner.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Tomorrow, the SEC returns for college football. It seemed like it might never get here. We're talking with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. And Greg, it's been a lot of different twists and turns, but what letter grade would you give the SEC athletes, not just football players, but everybody in fall sports, as we get closer to tomorrow's kickoff?
It's probably in different ways. So when we brought people back in June, they sort of went back to life, and you could go Google reports about isolations and test numbers. And so there was a quick learning experience that, life is not like it was the last time I was on campus. And so the early, the first quiz grade probably wasn't great, and it's progressed. And, again, anything can happen, but, we're in an A category with fall sports, but knowing things can happen because we're in a dynamic environment. So we've had to reschedule two soccer games already. That doesn't mean we have Fs, but you're going to have little circumstances that can have big implications. But they've learned the conversations, and we haven't had a football leadership video conference in about a month because they've been busy. But the questions they ask, go back to the Washington Post article where an hour and a half of just honest Q&A about what we know, what we don't know, what we control, and what we cannot control. I think that's the kind of thing we do in education. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not something you want secretly recorded and written, but that's what we're supposed to do. So I think they've all learned. And then as more sports came back, they've had to go through that same learning cycle. So as I understand on our campuses, we have a few whose early quiz grades have not been great, but I'm pretty confident they'll learn and adjust and move forward in a healthy way, just like we've seen through the summer. So the fact we're here means we've got an A on the report card at this point. But I would just say even a disruption like we've had in soccer doesn't mean you just go to an F. It's just the reality around this virus and how it can dictate some outcomes that we don't necessarily want to see, but that's reality now.
Last question for you, and we're talking with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, and we appreciate him coming and joining us on the eve of the return of SEC football. College Football Playoff Committee. Obviously, different conferences are making different decisions about coming back. There are going to be different games that are played, probably different schedules. It's going to be hard to assess different conference strengths because there's no out of conference. How excited are you in some ways just to be even able to have that debate given where you were in June, July, and August?
Very. And it's so, like, now all of a sudden I've had more questions about bowl games this week.
Yes.
Like, I haven't even played a football game. And then I had a question about, how many conference games are you going to play next season?
Yeah.
I'm like, let me play one this season. And how about I talk about 2021 and maybe, 2021. If we're at a selection day, that's a victory. We'll be doing it in a healthy manner. But if we're to Selection Day, December 20th, that's really healthy. And then if you look more broadly at the selection committee, they have a kind of a charging document that talks about games and evaluating games. We've heard about data points. So we've built in, I think, the 10 best data points possible, 10 SEC games. We've all lost the high-quality non-conference games. ACC has 11. They have a one non-conference situation, and then 10 within the conference. And then we've got somebody trying to play eight Big 10, Big 12s at 9 plus 1. Then I don't know what happens, you know, fully out west. We're kind of seeing that story emerging, right? So,
yeah,
we got 10 games, the most rigorous schedule in college football historically. I don't expect this year to be any different. We'll learn some things, and ultimately on December 20th, I'll have a knot in my stomach over CFP selection, but I'll have a little bit of breathing room if we're at a point where he's named a champion and completed a season in a positive and healthy way.
By the way, you never would have believed that I would say this to you and you'd be ecstatic to hear it, but I hope you have a bunch of officiating controversies, and that's the number one story that comes out Sunday and Monday for you. You've never rooted for it before, but if everybody's up in arms over whether a call was made, that means that things went pretty daggone normal for SEC football coming back.
Yeah, I have, Greg and I have any types of commentary on transfer waivers and officiating, and I'm like, we're playing football. Somebody said, why haven't you done this, this, and this? I got this email this morning. I'm like, I don't know. I've been busy the last 6 months trying to just figure out how to play a football game. So that takes a little bit of time. But, normal, I think, is important for our society right now. I'm not a sociologist. I took one class, like, my sophomore year in college. But I think some attachment to normal, whether it's a radio show like this or on our scale, seeing college football played is a healthy thing, provided it can be done in a healthy way, and that's what we're prepared to do.
I really do believe this. You've done an incredible job, and I believe more so than anybody else involved in college football, you're the reason that college football is happening. So congratulations. Enjoy the games kicking off tomorrow, and I hope you take a moment to just think about all the people that I know have been helping and working with you, but all that you've accomplished to make it happen and help to bring that sense of normalcy to many people across the country. Great job.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a tribute to a lot of folks. And, one thing I've learned about leadership this summer is there's all these books. Leadership's about tomorrow. And that's the reality, is you can do really good things today and people will, like, clap for you. And whatever you do tomorrow is going to be judged on its merits. So we're going to move to tomorrow. And, man, it'd be great to play 7 SEC football games. That would just be an incredible, incredible start, no matter what the complaints may be. But to accomplish that, in a way, it's for us monumental, given where we were 2 months ago.
Thanks, Greg.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.